This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
The execution of AI in many products right now is a veneer of a shiny object. And what I mean by that is there's a lot of capabilities that you're seeing software industry broadly attach AI to everything. And my answer to that is, what is the outcome that you want to achieve? And how is AI and the application of AI helping you achieve that outcome better, more efficiently, cheaper, at a higher level of quality? And if you can't answer those questions and you can't point to it driving an outcome, then it's just a shiny object and you shouldn't be building it.
Hi, I'm Clayton Collins, CEO at HW Media and your host for the Powerhouse podcast. Total Expert powers the customer journey for 35% of mortgage transactions. Absolutely phenomenal. But what's even cooler than that is founder and CEO Joe Wailu has the opportunity to talk to executives, CEOs, CMOs, CTOs, some of the leading mortgage and financial institutions each week. In this episode of Powerhouse, Joe shares some of his experience and journey building Total Expert and the perspectives that he's developed through these amazing conversations with leaders of the mortgage and financial services industry, and how that flows into how he thinks mortgage and mortgage marketing will operate in the future. We focus in on Gen Z leadership and the trends that are really powering mortgage in 2024 and beyond. I hope you enjoy this episode with Joe Wailu, founder and CEO of Total Expert. We're back. Today's guest is Joe Wailu, founder and CEO of Total Expert. Joe, welcome to Powerhouse.
Hey, thanks, Clayton. Appreciate you having me on.
I'm just happy that I actually said welcome to Powerhouse. We've been calling this show Housing News for the last 5 years. This is the first time I think I've actually got the intro right.
And Powerhouse episode is way better. I like it.
Joe, I want to kick off. I mean, you were the founder and CEO at Total Expert, a firm that has become absolutely dominant in marketing in the mortgage industry. But I want to go back to the origin story and talk about why you founded this business and why you were uniquely prepared to build this marketing software and technology juggernaut.
Yeah, that's a great question. And founding story, really, and I'll try to simplify it. I incubated the first version of Total Expert in the basement of a real estate office. So I ran a real estate team for about 12, 13 years. And that gave me a point of view on the current state of the industry as it related to how homeowners, home buyers would interact with both the real estate community and the lending community. And what I saw was it was, you know, very much about a consumer who wanted the outcome of home ownership, but didn't necessarily want all of the distractions and nuances that go with the complexity, right, of dealing with, you know, real estate person and a lending person. And my vision was really, how do we deliver better outcomes to consumers and at the same time deliver growth for the customers that we serve, which is primarily banks and lenders. And, you know, my original vision on the company was rooted in a lot of just personal motivation that I had, knowing the impact that our industry, putting people in homes, creating the American dream, that financial wealth or financial health and wellness outcome that happens from home ownership was really important to me. Early on in my childhood, you know, I witnessed what happens when consumers are not well informed and educated on important financial decisions. My parents experienced losing our family farm when I was very young to a foreclosure, and that was the result of making some bad financial decisions along the way. And as I got into my career, I saw a lot of similarities on consumers, homeowners getting into loans and mortgage products that weren't necessarily the best for their financial long-term picture, but it was a transaction, right? And I just believe that really connecting with people on a more human level and helping them achieve better financial outcomes is the right way to do business. And that was how we started innovating on Total Expert and building our first products, was from that lens.
How did you ultimately decide to serve the mortgage originator and IMBs and depositories versus building for the real estate agent as you were kind of incubating inside of this brokerage?
That's a great question. And so first of all, the first couple of years, like a lot of companies, was filled with a lot of trial and error and a lot of kind of failing things that didn't work. What we started to notice was the bigger opportunity, you know, housing, there's so much information and data and tons of websites that are all about looking at homes and, you know, imaging, giving you images of what that dream house looks like. There's tons of stuff out there like that. But what I saw lacking in the bigger opportunity was how the lending community was connecting, engaging, and working with the consumer. You know, I saw really a transactional business that wasn't necessarily rooted in going deeper with customer engagement, customer education, right? Really developing that long-term customer for life strategy as a lender, we saw that as a bigger opportunity. And so we said, look, you know, resources are always limited when you're starting companies. And so how can we make the biggest impact? And we saw lending as our way to make the biggest possible impact in the industry.
So today, I think if you start talking about customer for life and this like an empowered journey for homeowners, most lenders are going to nod their heads and say like, yeah, I agree with that. But if you look back historically, and as you pointed out, it hasn't always been a front and center focus, or at least the data tells us it hasn't been a front and center focus, as borrowers are more likely than not to go to a new lender when they refi or purchase their next house versus stay with the person who got them their first home or second home or whatever it is. So how did clients respond? How did lenders respond when you started talking about your vision and mission to empower this homeownership journey and support customer for life? Like, did they get it at the time, or did it feel like talk track?
Not initially, right? So how the vision has been shaped and formed is today we look at it as, number one, how do you deliver the perfect customer journey for every financial milestone? That's the North Star. And what does that mean? And then you got to kind of explain what is a perfect customer journey. And it's using data and intelligence to really understand the consumer, the customer, the human, their financial position in life, where they are right now, what their hopes and dreams are for the next 3, 5, 10 years, and then how that financial decision on which type of loan, how expensive of a home, how much debt to take on, how those decisions impact their life in the next 3, 5, 10 years, right? And so if you're doing those things and you're communicating with a customer from that point of view, and you're focused on the best possible outcome for them, we believed that is the best engine for growth, because those customers are going to be more loyal to you, right? If you help them get a better financial outcome, educate them on the ways to do that and not just churn through transactions. If you really serve them with the right combination of sort of that human touch, but technology enabled, we feel that perfect customer journey leads to a really long-term growing profitable business, and it's better outcomes for the consumers as well.
What was the profile of some of the early lenders that latched on to Total Expert and the strategy? Like who did the product resonate with, and how'd you get them onboarded?
Yeah. So, you know, we were very fortunate and always have been very fortunate to have amazing customers, and they really became our partners in building the platform, and they still are our partners. And I would say early on, it was you're more forward thinking, you know, the types of companies that look at the status quo and say, hey, how can I change this up? How can I move the needle? And so I would say more innovative, innovation forward companies that are willing to take some chances, but also, you know, swing big, think big and swing for the fences, so to speak. And so we tended to align with those organizations that had leadership in place, that had a vision for what would be possible, You know, if you could take data and the customer journey and really optimize that sales and marketing process, what could be possible? And so that was really who we aligned with early on.
So as you think about like the ICP, the ideal client profile in the early days and how that's evolved, did a lender need to be of a scale where they had a CTO and an engineering team to like get through an implementation, or is it a lighter lift implementation? Like, how do you like define who can actually benefit from a platform like Total Expert and get it done?
So it evolved over the years as the platform has gotten more robust and powerful. And, you know, first of all, I would say our focus is constantly innovating and improving how we work with our customers, getting them live and getting them faster time to value is always a focus. And I don't think you're ever done with trying to get better at that, right? But for us, as we got a more robust platform, and if you think about a customer journey, you got a lot of data, you've got a lot of touch points, a lot of interactions with that process from lead to customer for life. And there's a lot of orchestration there. And so you do have to have, or did, and I would say still do have to have, at least some kind of expertise internally that understands the value and then how to move the pieces around, how to get data connected, those types of things. If you don't have it internally, the cool part for us this last couple of years is we've started to align with a really outstanding team of partners in our ecosystem that can come in alongside even a smaller lender and, you know, very inexpensively help make them successful if they don't have these huge organizations. So we've been able to have flexibility by thinking more broadly about, you know, who we partner with and how we bring value to the customers.
Oh, really interesting. So when you say partners, are these like implementation partners who come in and provide third-party tech support?
Yeah. So we've got some agency partners and some ISV implementation partners. And they all do various things. But what we've learned is, you know, we're really building a platform. And that platform, the capabilities are robust, and not every lender needs to touch all of those things. Some of them might have very more simplistic needs, and some of them maybe have very complex needs. If they have millions of past customers and multiple business lines and distribution channels, that's more complexity. And so we saw an opportunity to say, hey, we want a long-term partnership. How do we make that successful? And how do we make it the most successful we possibly can? And the answer was not just the technology, but you had to have best practices and expertise. And what we noticed is sometimes the best way to bring those best practices and that expertise is to bring in a partner that can sit right alongside the lender or bank and work with them as a partner for 3, 6, 12 months, or even in some cases ongoing, and cost effectively help them increase the levels of success that they have with the rollout.
That's really interesting. As I think about like other, like the biggest software companies, like think of like the Salesforces of the world, like they've gone through iterations where they want to be vertically integrated and like control the platform and like the services business. And other times where like they want to like kind of move services and implementations to a partner. Have you ever thought about like the pros and cons of vertically integrated versus partner model and like how you made that decision?
Yeah. So first of all, you know, we are vertical focused 100% on financial services. It's all we do. It's all we think about. Every integration, every partner that we focus on has to have value to our customer base. And if they don't, we don't do it. So it's hyper-focus in the category, first of all. And then from there, what we've noticed is it's not one or the other. It's not, hey, do we do all of our implementations externally or versus internally? It's always most likely going to be a combination of the two. And we have the technology platform, and then we have, you know, a menu of professionals and services, some of those internal at Total Expert, and some of them through, depending on what the topic is, if it's data analysis or if it's, you know, integrations of a certain kind, there's a partner that is the best in the world at that thing. And so we want to be best in the world at connecting the dots for our customers on the platform, but then be able to tap into this menu of services and partners who are the best in the world at other things, right? Some of the people we work with are, I was on the phone yesterday, actually, with one of our agency partners, and she's phenomenal at designing end-to-end journeys and workflows, right? Think of like a sales and marketing process. She's an expert on it. She's mapped thousands of them. She can come in alongside a lender and get them value so much faster than if they were relying on their internal team to say, hey, what's our customer journey map look like, right? So it's just aligning with people that are the very best at what they do and then knowing when to tap into those resources.
Interesting. Okay, so once you're implemented and working with a mortgage lender, what does that relationship look like from there? Are there, and I guess what I'm kind of getting to is, like, have your clients been influential in helping define the roadmap? How does that information flow and communication flow work with your key clients?
Absolutely. So first of all, we look at every customer. We want those to be decade plus long partnerships. And if you talk to our customer base, we're definitely not perfect in everything we release and don't always, like most technology, it's not always a perfect science. It's not a perfect line between here to here. Sometimes there's course corrections you have to do along the way. But our customers are absolutely the driving force for what we're building and why we're building it. We meet with a ton of customers every single month. We look at end user data. And then more importantly, we look at the outcomes that the organizations want to achieve, right? And say, sometimes they think, well, hey, I want this shiny object. But actually, what they're trying to get is an outcome, a business outcome. And sometimes there's other ways to get that business outcome that might be more impactful, more efficient, that they might not be thinking about, right? So it gives you this partnership approach. It gives you this partnership point of view to where you're always able to look at the inputs, the requests, but then come back with a point of view on how to solve those requests that isn't necessarily saying, hey, just take our order and build this feature. It's help us win, help us get to the next, this bigger outcome. And then we collaborate on how to do that. And it's, I love it. I mean, you can see I get really excited about it. Love to innovate. Our team loves it. It's what juices them. And so the inputs for our roadmap are absolutely customers and then data from the users and what they see and need, but then also looking at how do we move the needle? How do we help these guys grow 20, 30% a year plus? How do we help them be more profitable? How do we help them find the deals that are falling through the cracks? We ground on kind of those outcomes.
Are there any current like features or parts of the product suite that just wouldn't exist if it wasn't for a client like being very collaborative and vocal that this was something that was important?
So absolutely. And Trey Rigdon, actually, if you know Trey, he just took a role as CMO at Summit, and he was in marketing at Movement for a long time. And I give him, jokingly, I tell him, I said, we should have your signature on our journeys part of our product, because his input really shaped a big part of the way our journey orchestration, that marketing automation part of our platform, functions. And he was very influential and very deliberate and intentional on saying, hey, here's why we need this and here's what it's going to do. Took a few years longer than what we would have wanted to realize that full vision. But I would say, that's an example.
That's really cool. Nice shout out for Trey too. At HousingWire, we're obsessed with data and analytics. Without good insight, there's no shot at operational excellence or innovation. Mortgage lenders that want to thrive in today's market must have access to due diligence and valuation intel, risk management tools, and predictive analytics. And they have to cover everything from the asset to the enterprise. This is exactly what Consolidated Analytics does. If you want to make more informed decisions and optimize performance, you have to check out Consolidated Analytics. Visit consolidatedanalytics.com to start your journey toward more informed decision making. So as the business has evolved over the years, how have you changed your leadership team? And I'm coming back to a conversation that you and I had. I think we were in San Jose at an MBA event a couple of years past, and we were both talking CEO to CEO about like how like the demands on a leadership team, the skills that are necessary at different stages seems to change pretty quickly as businesses grow, market cycles change. How is your approach to leading your organization and building this leadership team that I'm sure, you know, really supports the business on a day-to-day basis changed as you've scaled over the last 12 years?
Yeah, I would say, so first of all, it's evolved tremendously. And, you know, we've definitely collaborated on this topic. Early on, your expectation is I can bring on a team member and, hey, they're going to be with me for the long-term journey here. They're going to be with us till the end, right? And sometimes that's true, right? If people have this mindset of evolving and getting better and constantly leveling up, right? And some people just innately are obsessed with getting better personally and growing their knowledge and those types of things. And if they are, a lot of times they're going to evolve with the company. But you have to be really brutally honest with yourself and your leadership team in saying, hey, here's what I see. And, you know, this particular team or leader of this team or this particular contributor, I haven't seen them step it up every year, or I haven't seen them step it up in the last 6 months. You have the opportunity to coach them and set clear expectations. So a couple of things. One, you have to be brutally honest with yourself as a leader on who should be on the bus and who shouldn't be. And we're an organization that thrives in a high performance culture and mindset, right? And we push hard. And so what we learned is let's not apologize for that. And let's not try to accommodate people that, you know, think in terms of mediocrity is okay. And so we got, you know, we started thinking about this and how do we deliver this message at an organizational level and come right out. And the answer was come right out and be totally transparent with who you hire and your existing team on what your expectations are and the type of organization that you have as the standard, right? And that is standard of excellence. And then it's constantly observing, you know, the outcomes that your team is getting. And they're either solving problems and moving the business forward or they're not. And you have to look at that and not be afraid to, just like a professional sports team, sometimes you've got really talented players and they're not playing well together and they're not winning. And sometimes there's not an easy reason why, but you have to make some changes. And sometimes that's what's needed.
Yeah, that topic of like talking about excellence reminds me of a conference I went to, right? Like I was a brand new CEO. This is like 6 or 7 years ago. And I was at Stanford and another CEO was sharing a story where he's like, hey, we grew 100% last year. And everyone's like, whoa, like that's huge. He's like, and I fired my CRO. And I was like, oh. And then he's like, yeah, we grew like 112% the next year. And I fired my CRO. I'm like, what? Like, what's going on? You're doubling the business every year, but still like replacing the person who like, carries the responsibility for that growth. And there's 2 points. Didn't play well with the rest of the team and was causing like chaos internally. But 2, the CEO also thought there was a market tailwind that should have had them growing at 150%. And 112 wasn't the opportunity that like could have been had by someone at the top of their game in his view. But that was a real like crazy story that like has you know stuck with me on like managing talent.
Yeah, I have one of my mentors is a CEO of a pretty well-known publicly traded company in software, and you know he has done a similar play to where he's replaced different parts of his team. And is that what you want to do? No, of course not. I'm a relationship focused person and I'd love having the team alongside me the whole way, but winning, you know, is the North Star and helping our customers win specifically. And if we're accomplishing that and we have the pieces in place to do that, awesome, let's keep going. And if we don't, we're going to make those adjustments. And, you know, I think it's a great lesson. It's harder to do in reality, but when you do it, it can be really a force multiplier for your business.
How has your job as CEO changed over the years?
That's a great question too. Man, it has changed so much. And I'm sure you can identify with this to where, you know, your first couple years and really first 4 or 5 years, you're just doing anything and everything, right? I mean, I was telling, we had our sales kickoff this week. And I was telling one of our SDRs, one of our business development reps, I said, you know, I was the SDR, the account exec, the sales engineer, the implementation manager, and the customer success person. I was those things all at the same time for a number of years. And so as you evolve,
you still had to write the paychecks and turn the lights on every morning. And
I mean, everything. And you just do whatever. Yeah. You have the mentality as an entrepreneur. And those, you know, those in the audience that are entrepreneurs will understand this. You have to be willing to do whatever it takes. And there's no ego. You're going to take out the trash for as long as you have to and until it makes sense to hire somebody to do that.
Yeah.
So I think the early days, it's just whatever it takes. And then it's really transitioning at each level to a more strategic focus. And I spend a lot of my time now talking about the future and working on the future, right? Certain amount of time focused on the execution of today, but a lot of my time spent talking to other CEOs and leaders of our customers and where they see the industry going in the next 2, 3, 4 years. And then I'm backing into solutions and roadmap items that help them accomplish that, right? So I spend a lot more time on kind of setting the vision and then big strategic things, relationship things, that partnership things that really are needle moving items more than I used to do.
How do you manage that flow of communication from all these great external conversations you're having with other industry leaders and CEOs of clients and prospects? How do those ideas, priorities flow into your team and hopefully get something that happens with those that influence some kind of outcome?
So we have a software tool to where there's different layers of inputs. So we have a software tool to where we get feedback from our people at the customer level that are using the product every day, right? Which might be, you know, marketing coordinators, it might be loan officers, and they're able to put ideas in a portal that we collect, we synthesize, filter those, and then those go into a selection process for our roadmap. And some of those things make it onto the roadmap and some don't. But we get a lens for the level of importance based on how many people vote for that particular item. So that's the input at I would say, the user and people using the product. The inputs at the executive level are just as important or even more important in some cases. And those conversations are happening all the time from, you know, like Dan Catanella, our chief lending officer, James White, our general manager of banking. They are having executive conversations every week. And so we meet weekly about, you know, we have an extended leadership team that is pretty customer facing. We meet weekly, sometimes a couple of times a week, just for catch ups. And we're always sharing kind of the key talking points or key themes that we're hearing. And so we don't let a week go by without connecting and saying, okay, what are the patterns, any different pattern recognition, themes that we need to talk about? And then we are, you know, prioritizing the big bucket items. Data and intelligence is a huge theme for us. And it's a huge theme for us because it was so needed from talking with our customers, right? Saying, how can I drive the business forward in an environment that's brutal? And the answer is, well, you've got tremendous amounts of business setting here that's falling in the trash can. Let's use some data and intelligence to capture it. And so that's an example of how we bring those things to life.
Kind of a selfish question from my own experience, but have you had any of those external inputs that you or Dan or someone else from the leadership team heard from a client or saw from a competitor that might have changed a part of the roadmap or even made you abandon work that had already been done because of something you're hearing in market or a trend you're starting to see?
What it has done, I would say, is it's forced us to reprioritize certain things. And so we had some things that we reprioritized and put lower on the priority list to prioritize our customer intelligence part of our product and our platform. And the reason that we did that is it was so clear that if we were able to bring kind of that intelligence that helped our customers identify opportunities and then connected that directly to the system of action, right? The workflows and the sales and marketing journeys that we have, that would really, you'd be able to purely look at ROI and you'd easily be able to generate incremental volume deal flow, right? And so that's an area where we said, hey, that is going to have a bigger impact for our customer base broadly than, I won't name the features because there might be somebody out there that's going to be like, hey, I knew they, you know, deprioritized my request. But we deprioritized things that when we looked at it, they said, yeah, there's some noise around this particular item. It's a shiny object. But if I really look at the value creation that we're going to be able to generate for our customer, I didn't see the power or the impact of the value from building that as much as I saw. It was 10x, 20x, the customer intelligence side. And so that's an example of how we prioritized from themes that we were hearing in the market and how that resulted in us shifting gears, right?
All right. So thinking through the lens of like the broader mortgage technology ecosystem, and you just use the phrase shiny object, so I'm going to latch on to that. Is AI a shiny object?
No. The execution of AI in many products right now is a veneer of a shiny object, if that's even a thing. And what I mean by that is there's a lot of capabilities that these you're seeing software industry broadly attach AI to everything. And my answer to that is, what is the outcome that you want to achieve, and how is AI and the application of AI helping you achieve that outcome better, more efficiently, cheaper, at a higher level of quality? And if you can't answer those questions and you can't point to it driving an outcome, then it's just a shiny object and you shouldn't be building it. Our approach on AI specifically has been around, how do we drive better outcomes as it relates to higher engagement with the consumer, higher conversion rates from lead to application, and then, of course, higher retention rates? And where can AI help us do that? There's some great technology that we are working on very intensely right now around content and helping more efficiently generate really high quality, authentic content. So we're working on that, and that's got a lot of AI components to it. And then on the data side of things, helping customers optimize their database, right? Deduplication, getting that golden record of a customer, and then bringing that all together. There's a lot of AI capabilities that are advantageous to those use cases as well.
How can a mortgage lender tell what's a veneer, what vendors and what technology partners are working on AI projects that are of note and real versus who just decided to drop a .ai at the end of their company name and not actually like build something that's going to move the needle?
Yeah. So I don't think it's always totally obvious, by the way, and I don't think you can always identify it. I think sometimes there's a lot of, I would say, TBD out there, right? To where you're seeing companies that have invested and raised a lot of money for AI forward solutions, and they're early. And I think the jury's still out. But as a lender, a bank that serves this industry, I would focus first and foremost on what are the most important outcomes for your organization that will help you really make an impact in the business and to your customers. Start there. And then work your way backwards and saying, okay, this is an AI solution. Where does it fit in to helping me achieve these outcomes? And then give me referenceability for customers that have tried those solutions, or show me the case study, or if it's a prototype, show me the demo and illustrate to me how it helps me achieve one of these important outcomes. And I think that's the only way to do it, is you got to ground in outcomes.
Thank you.
Joe, let's talk a little bit about trends in home ownership. There's been a lot of talk about generational trends for a while, but the talk used to be baby boomers and these millennials, they're never going to buy homes. Well, we know what happened there. Now we're talking about Gen Z. Give us a view into how you're thinking about generational trends in home ownership and how lenders are thinking about who that next buyer is going
to
be.
Yeah. So, man, there's a lot to unpack there. So the first thing I would say is you and I both believe in the American dream of home ownership. And we know the statistics that, you know, I think it's homeowners have a 40 times higher net worth than a renter. Like, that's pretty impactful. Why does that matter, right? So if you think about it, for the average person, if they can create equity in a home, a place for their family, that equity gives them security. It gives them a backstop. And for a lot of those people, that's maybe the only avenue they have to build that long-term security. So I believe that home ownership is still the American dream, and it always will be a component of that. What I think has changed is the accessibility to home ownership for the younger generation. It's tougher. They're more expensive. Rates are higher now. So it has moved the needle for some of those individuals on the timing. But here's what I'm seeing that I know a lot of our customers are giving us feedback on this. Largely, there's a lot of demand from those early those younger generations to buy. And they're saying, hey, this is a goal. And it might take me 2 years, 3 years to get there. And so the opportunity, and I always look at what's the opportunity here. The opportunity for these lenders today is identify those segments of the market and partner with them, educate them, help them on that journey to home ownership and think long term, right? If you're starting today, it might be 2 years before you're realizing the fruits of that, right? To where those people might not be buying for a year, 2 years, 3 years. But if that's a part of your playbook, you're going to have an incredible business because there's no doubt they are going to have families. They're going to want to be grounded with a place to call home. And they're going to need money to do that and a loan to do that most likely.
Whether that delay in 2 years is because of saving for a down payment, getting income to a certain level, waiting for rates to come down, which we know might not be the smartest play. How should a lender respond to that inquiry or opportunity of someone who might not be ready to buy for 2 years? And through the lens that LOs often change shops and people come and people go, and like there's a lot of distractions in life, how do you hold on to that 2 year lead?
Yeah, so I think it's truly one of the biggest opportunities out there. And we call it, you know, being up funnel, right? From lenders in a lot of cases are pretty good if they're going to transact that month or that quarter, maybe within a few months. They're really terrible if it's a year, if it's 2 years out, they're brutally terrible, right? Most of them. And so it's important to have that as a key initiative in your organization. What is our long-term nurture and engagement strategy for our cohorts of prospects, right? Our segments of the market. And you have to properly segment those customers, those prospects, those potential home buyers. You have to segment them into categories so that you can communicate with them, educate them with the context that you need to connect, right? Because if you're just sending them BS marketing stuff and they don't find it valuable, they're not going to pay attention and that's not going to help you. So the opportunity is truly having that be a priority, saying, we are going to be world-class at nurturing and incubating future homeowners. We're going to educate them. We're going to communicate with them. We're going to coach them. And if you're willing to do that, you're going to reap the payoffs. And I think that is truly, you have to prioritize it. And then tactically, there's things like segmentation of the audience, customization of the content, and those pieces kind of brought together yield a lot of real potential rewards.
And it has to be tech enabled because there's not many originators out there who are going to, you know, take the time to nurture a single lead for 2 years. And, you know, and it might not be the best use of time to go hand to hand combat nurturing somebody for 2 years because, you know, you have to survive until that point. So do you think it's you talked about total expert leveraging AI and like the content generation side. Do you think that AI is going to get it done? Or is this next generation who grew up, who's growing up in a world where they've been flooded with content and will soon be flooded with AI content, we'll see through it? Like, how do we, like, we know they're going to like, we know they're going to know, like, what's AI, what's human? Like, how do we like make sure like they just don't think it's a veneer?
So my answer to AI is always in the short term, and I mean the next couple of years, it's AI plus human in the loop. That has okay. to be there. And what that means is if you're firing out content just with AI and you're not checking it, you're not tweaking it for authenticity, quality, whatnot, you're going to end up making mistakes and sending things out that are not going to work or resonate, right? It is a tool to increase productivity. It is not a replacement for human expertise. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but it is a, I've heard that before, but it is a tone change from like how people were talking about AI 18, 24 months ago, where the biggest topic, the biggest headline was how many jobs it was going to replace.
Yeah. So, and I think you have to bucket and we're speaking about AI as it relates to that customer journey, kind of customer facing marketing and sales engagement, those types of things. There's also back office capabilities in underwriting and those types of things that I think have the potential to certainly make people tremendously more efficient and probably allow them to upskill some of those individuals that are doing super manual tasks. They can now elevate them and have them doing higher value things. And in some cases, maybe that does result in less headcount. Hopefully, it results in more output and better outcomes. And if you're doing that, then of course, you're still going to need expertise, you know, people in the organization with expertise. And so from our point of view, it is the most profound technological shift since the internet, maybe bigger than the internet, but it's going to take time to sort of weave its way through all of the capabilities and the processes that we do.
All right, cool. Well, this is a good kind of tease into AI. I was talking this week with a friend, Rick Rock, and he introduced me a few weeks
ago. Is that Dr. Rick?
Yeah, Dr. Rick. But he introduced me to a Dr. Moss from Stanford, who's building some AI capabilities and as a researcher and as an entrepreneur. So we might be playing another episode to go deeper in that, like that operational side of AI and how it can come into like the processing and underwriting and operations processes. So if the audience likes this conversation we're having today, I'll definitely do that and go deeper on AI.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to talk about there. You know, you can talk about there's privacy concerns. There's a lot of technical things that you have to be thoughtful of.
Yep.
Right. Particularly in regulated financial services.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up the word regulated because I love and noticed how like the total expert company description, you mentioned serving regulated entities, which is a, you know, it's a very specific detail to have in a company description, but I think it's important to the way you've focused the organization.
Yeah. Yeah. If you think about, you know, customer engagement, sales, marketing, how you're communicating with customers, there's a lot of data privacy and preferences that really matter to consumers. And, you know, there's a lot of technology that is built for the masses, you know, maybe e-commerce and things like that, that are, you're not maybe communicating about sensitive things that have thousands and thousands of dollars of impact, right? If somebody interprets it wrong or makes the wrong decision. So it just adds the level of, you know, complexity that you have to build into your solutions if you serve this space.
Joe, awesome episode. Thank you for exploring your entrepreneurial journey and sharing some of that expertise you gained by working with customers and clients and partners across the mortgage industry every day. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, buddy. Love the great work you guys are doing, man. Keep it up.